So I assume since I've seen you last, that everyone moved back in in Greencastle to start the new school year at DePauw. I read one of the strongest academic profiles of the student body at the university this year. That's amazing.
It is actually last year's freshman class, first year student class, had an average grade point average of 3.7 leaving high school, and this year's is at 3.8, and their testing scores were a bit higher also. So yes, they're here. They started class a week ago. This coming Wednesday, they'll have been in for a full week. So the transition has indeed occurred, and all the upperclassmen are back, and things are buzzing.
It's been a wet summer. A little flooding in Greencastle, I hear, a week or so ago. Is everything okay?
About a week ago, actually, it was the night of our summer music fest, our fifth annual summer music fest, and within about a 45-minute period of time, we got almost 3 inches of rain. So it was pretty severe, and there were flooding in places that we had never seen flooding before. So I don't know how you prepare for that. I don't think you can adequately prepare for that kind of a deluge in a short period of time. But most certainly things are dried out and people are drying out, and many are hoping their insurances will pay for some of the damages that were incurred. But quite honestly, we had buildings that have never been flooded, both throughout the community, through the university. And so it was really a storm that we hadn't expected. And fortunately, the only thing I can say about it at the end of the day is people still came out to listen to music by 8 o'clock that night. So the music fest wasn't a complete washout, but it certainly, the rain dampened it quite a bit.
I think the last time we talked, there was some construction being done on some new, oh, it was Indiana Street, I believe, and there was some new, down an alleyway, I believe, there was some new drainage or maybe
It
water.
worked perfectly.
Did that,
It
okay.
worked perfectly. There's a trench drain down an alley that really had been it's been a walkway that people have used. We tried to enhance the walkway, but actually did put a trench drain down through there to pick up some of the water flow. The water really falls off from what is Vine Street in Greencastle down to Indiana Street. So in the winter, it's solid ice. We also had a problem with downspouts that over the years they had just been allowed to flow out onto the alleyway, really exacerbating the problem. So we tied in those downspouts and got the trench drain in, and it worked perfectly that night.
Indiana Street is now open.
It is
It looks
open.
great. I drove through on the way in.
People have been really pleased with how the work came together on it. Obviously, we've got more construction to the east and the west still to happen, but it was open the day before the first year students were to arrive on campus, which certainly made the getting on and off campus and down to the bookstore much easier for everyone involved. The people do tend to walk that one little extra block so they can walk down Indiana Street, which I think is a testament to how they're feeling about the experience of that walk. And we're really pleased with how it's come out. There's some minor odds and ends still to finish up. We just had our walkthrough last Thursday on it. And so the Reith Riley, who is the construction company in charge of that project, will be finishing those off with their subs. And we'll say to that one, it's in the box, and we'll get ready for Vine Street next year and do it all over again.
I was just going to ask, what's next?
Well, right now, the parking lots are what's going on right now. And we have Gibraltar Construction is here doing those parking lots, and we're hoping to have them both finished by middle of November, which would be delightful so that we can go into next year when we move traffic off another street to have full parking available in those two lots as well as the other city lots.
Where are they again?
They're each a block off the downtown square.
Okay.
One is just off Washington Street, West Washington Street, and the other is right off Indiana Street where we just finished the work, and it's between Indiana and Jackson Street.
And what's the timeline for those lots to be open?
November 15th
of this
this
year?
year.
Oh, wow. So
Yes,
things are moving
they're
fast.
moving, and again, there's a lot of drainage, and that's part of what we're looking at with that project. There is an awful lot of drainage work that needs to be done, and we need to tie in what we've been able to correct on Indiana Street with this year's project. And actually, underneath, we have a detention system on the parking lot that's going in between Indiana and Jackson that's actually going to do not only slow down the flow of stormwater, but actually filter it out. So by the time it gets back to Big Walnut Creek, it will be cleaner, and we'll be able to slow it down a little bit and be more effective in our channeling of that water.
Were there any studies done or in terms of parking, mm-hmm. or what has become evident throughout the years in terms of the needs of parking in downtown Greencastle?
Well, I think the one thing that's become evident, we have gone through a phase where parking was free, then we metered all of our parking, then we pulled the parking meters out again and put 2-hour limits in the areas that are closest to the downtown square area, the retail square area, and the courthouse. We've been a bit frustrated that we find property owners, business owners, and some of our courthouse employees who, instead of being willing to move a block or so off campus, have continued to park right in those main parking areas again and go out and actually move their vehicles every 2 hours. So that has created a continued parking issue. So we found that the meters didn't help change that, and the going to limited 2-hour parking didn't change that. What we need to do is offer free parking and really enforce it very strictly to make sure that those folks who are going to be in the downtown area for a full 8-hour day push out a little bit. So what we've found is we do have a need. The question is, how do we manage it from here? So hopefully these changes that are going to be coming up once those lots are finished will enable you, say, if you're coming to Greencastle, to have a place to be able to pull in and have a meal, or just stop for coffee or to get some books.
I also read about some new upgrades, including a runway at the airport. What was all done, and how does that affect Greencastle?
Well, I think having an airport where you can land small jets is extremely important in a community like Greencastle. That some of our industry uses it with some regularity to get their folks in and out of the community. We certainly have DePauw alumni who come in by plane. It's a convenience. It's wonderful to have here. It adds a dimension where young people can learn about flight and they can actually learn to fly. It had gotten rid of, there actually was a hump that had developed in the runway. So it's extended the runway, it's eliminated the hump, and it's striped and it's open again, and it's a wonderful addition. I think what we'll see, we have Airport Appreciation Days coming up this weekend, and the Young Eagle Association will be taking youngsters up for flights, and I think everybody will be amazed at what they're seeing now as they're coming in to land. It'll make landing safer. It'll make our ability to use that airport, I think, a little more enticing. We have a good number of people who fly in on Saturday mornings. They fly in, they have breakfast at the Dixie Chopper Center there and refuel and then go back out on their way. So it's great for business. It's great for the recreational flyer. It's great for young people to be exposed to flight, and for many residents here to actually learn how to get up in a plane and pilot and land it on that field. So it's wonderful to have it back up and operational.
Any update on the budget since we last talked?
Oh, goodness. A week from today, the City Council will be looking at the budget again. It was handed out at the last council meeting. We're going to be passing our first ordinance on the acceptance of the budget for this year, making any changes before that's done, and it'll go to second reading in October. We'll also be looking for the Board of Works to be sending, after they meet on Wednesday, recommendations for rate increases for our water and wastewater system. So they're two separate issues, one dealing with the general fund, one dealing with utility, but our budget process is moving forward, and most certainly our budgets for utilities are moving forward, although they're usually under the purview of the Board of Works. Any changes in that rate structure most certainly has to go to council for two readings of ordinance approval. So the budget is coming. You know, I think there's concerns. I think there are concerns all through the state of Indiana on potentially what happens if there is more that legislature takes on when it comes to personal property taxes and where those will fall and our ability to collect. And I think, as you and I have talked before, that's 20% of our city budget. It's a pretty substantial portion if they were to be eliminated altogether. So I don't know how we recover from that. In terms of our general fund budget, we're looking at, interestingly enough, perhaps some slight decrease or at least holding steady of our certified shares. We would have hoped, with unemployment varying as much as it has, but jobs being available in our community, that would be a strong point for us this year. We had also, and do also hope, not to see sharp spikes in health insurance, which is costly for us as well as it is for all municipalities. So we figure our budget on the worst case scenario, and most certainly hope it comes in better than that. But I think the full effects of property tax caps are now being felt by all of us in cities and towns. And it's difficult, and it's going to be increasingly difficult. And the question is, you know, again, are we talking cutting services? Are we talking compromising public safety? You certainly never want to get to that point in time. But if AVs continue to drop, and if something happens with business personal property tax and our certified shares go down, there are going to be a lot of communities having to make really tough decisions.
Well, and you and Greencastle are seeing expenditures, especially in with this whole water supply.
Mm-hmm. Unfunded mandate.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And is it fair to say that that kind of came out of nowhere,
It came out for two reasons. Yeah. First off, we went over 10,000 in the 2010 mm-hmm. census. And so that population increase all of a sudden made us a large water user. And when you're a large water user, you have different sets of testing that you have to go through. So in that testing and in scrutiny that came subsequently, we were found to have fluctuations in the temperature of our wells. And that triggered an agreed order that we were given last October, which again, for us, it was really not something we had been apprised of before or really had an opportunity to react to, that we have to make some substantial changes in how we produce water in order to stay in business. So we've gone through 6 months now of looking at what our alternatives are, trying to figure out what is the best way to move forward, because we have until April of 2015 to make those corrections. And we've come up with a plan. We have submitted it to the Board of Works. Council has been apprised of it. And we're looking at ways to fund it. It's almost a $2.7 million fix, if you will. And that doesn't include the necessity to be able to employ WT5 operators, certified operators, that have to be on duty whenever water is being produced. So up until now, a WT3 has been sufficient to run our plant, and we could run it off a SCADA system, an emergency system at night. But now whenever you produce in a large water producer, you have to have a WT5 on site, and most certainly that presents challenges in and of itself. So, you know, again, our production and our reception systems are critical to be able to have water and wastewater services in a community. You have to do that. It's separate from the budget. Those are user fees, and that's about the only thing municipalities have a chance to really affect is what happens in user fees and utilities and user fees in general to generate more revenues. But those fees don't take care of property tax caps. They're two very, very separate issues. And sometimes people get that confused, that, well, if you raise these rates, then that should help take care of that. And that can't happen. You don't commingle those funds. So two very distinct issues, both coming to City Council next Tuesday for discussion and action.
So that $2.7 million fix that you talk about comes from the fees generated from users?
It has to.
It has to.
It's so gonna.
Has that started already?
We haven't had a rate increase since 2006. So what we're gonna be looking at and what we're applying for is state revolving loan fund funding for that project. So we have to be able to pay the debt service on that. And so that's what we're going to have to be able to generate. Not only taking care of that, but obviously we have a water system that in some places we still have pipe that's 100 years old in place. And so we need to be able to continue to upgrade our system. We need to be able to continue to care for it, because we not only supply to the local community of Greencastle, but we have rural water users who are also dependent. So we sell wholesale water out to three different rural water components. And so we do supply a good area in the county. So it's really important. And our collection system is equally as important, because you have to transport and then treat the wastewater that comes in. And the plant we have is 12 years old. It was state of the art when it was built, but it's still 12 years old, and you have to continue to maintain and upgrade and care for that system to keep it operating. So the challenges are very real that we as a community are facing, the financial challenges. But again, I think through hard work of the department heads to manage their budgets and manage personnel costs, we'll hopefully be able to continue to glide through this period and get ourselves on track for many more years of prosperity. Because in essence, we did well, comparatively well, through the Great Recession of 2008 through 2010. And we continue to have people employed, and we continue to have jobs available and investment in the community. So this is another challenge, and another challenge we'll need to kind of pull ourselves together and figure out how we're going to face it.
Is it too early to say the type of increase that residents would have to expect?
Well, what we have to look at two things. We have to look at not just what this $2.67 million fix is going to be. We also have to look at the needs of the water distribution system and how we continue to care for that. And our water treatment plant is even older than our wastewater treatment plant. And so we have to make sure that we take a look at that five-year plan and what's in that five-year plan, as well as what the unfunded mandate looks like, and how do we work those things together that through the rate increase we're able to go ahead and execute that five-year plan, pay off that $2.7 million debt, and continue to be able to provide what our local folks are needing and expecting. That rate will, you know, we've got some tentative ideas. Board of Works will make their final determination on that tomorrow as we work through it. But we've had the help of Crowe Horwath, who has been our financial consultants on this, because quite frankly, when you talk about needing to make increases and needing to borrow that kind of money, we really want someone else who is looking with a fresh set of eyes, because I think those of us internally would like to be able to be as conservative as we possibly can, because we know it affects people on their bottom line and in their pocketbook. But we need to be realistic about it also, and that's why we've called in some outside help to help us look at all the different factors that we need to be weighing to come up with a realistic percentage. We'll also be looking at how that compares with other municipalities throughout this part of the state. Most certainly, I think we've all read about concerns that the Indiana Chamber has about water, and how the farther south in the state you get, the more difficult it's going to be to continue to supply what the need is, and how do we use water from an area like Putnam County in north that is more plentiful and bring it down. The water is an extremely valuable resource, and I think we've taken it for granted for a long time, but it is essential, and it's something that we need to protect, and we need to make sure that we have done everything we can to have the most efficient pumping stations possible, the safest water getting out, and to do that efficiently and effectively, you can't keep rates where they've been for us 8 years, because most certainly everything else continues to rise during that interim, and we've been pretty conservative in our approach.
And I see where finally the Miller School renovations, demolition is starting. I know we've talked about this before,
but it's exciting.
I believe the wheels are in motion. But also to go along with that historical impact, it seems like a lot of residents have a part in their heart for that place.
They absolutely do. And the wonderful part is that the developer, Milestone Ventures, seems to have that same appreciation for the building. The developer wanted people to come in and actually be able to see it, because it's been closed off to them for a number of years. So they got in, they walked through the halls, they got to reminisce about places that they had been, classrooms that they had occupied, and he talked to them about some of the old doors, how they were going to be able to reutilize those in new and different ways throughout the building, how they were going to be actually putting plaques on the doors and hoping that they could get the names of the teachers and Mrs. So-and-so's first grade class last here and 1979. So they're really paying attention to those kinds of details. They recognize the fact that the Delilah Miller School is within a National Register district, and it is a contributing factor. And so it really is a nice blend. And I think people are going to be really proud next year when they have the opportunity to go into that structure again as it's newly developed and it's newly reconfigured and designed. It's a great addition for us. And it's on our city park, and it's at the main entrance to the university. So it's going to be a wonderful place for its 33 or so new residents to live.
Great. Anything else I've missed?
I think it's important from my perspective to share that we got notification last week that Greencastle has been once again named the Green Community of the Year for communities between 10,000 and 50,000 in population. And that's the Indiana Association of Cities and Towns who make that distinction. And we are very proud of that. I think they've done it for 6 years, and the 5 years we've applied, we've won in the area, population area that we're in. So really proud again of department heads and some of the innovating kinds of ways that they have approached sustainability and how they can make their little pieces of that large pie for the community better for all of us. So very proud of that.
Yeah.
So that's coming up, and that's going to be given out at the IACT convention in September 10th, as a matter of fact.
And this is based upon how the city itself uses energy or becomes green?
How it becomes green, what our operating practices are. I think, as I mentioned earlier, that detention system underneath the stormwater detention system, underneath the parking lot, it's a clean water initiative, which is certainly recognized as something extremely important. And when you look at what is sustainable lifestyle, we're somewhat limited by budget. I mean, there are a lot of things we would like to do, but unfortunately budget keeps us from being able to do them aggressively all at once. But we're kind of plugging away at it, and we've made it a priority. And most certainly our MS4 program helps underscore that, and as we look at our municipal practices. So just really proud that we're going to be able to accomplish that one more time and to celebrate that with the community at large.